This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, October the 10th. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is here to bring us up to date on the latest issues kicking around at the state capitol, from health care to toll roads, from election rules to the latest on the campaign trail for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin, from getting more kids involved in hunting to the rules for training for the concealed carry law. And we welcome your questions and input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. There is much to get to, so let's get started. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So we will be talking with a guest from the NRA coming up after 7:30. The NRA is upset with Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen for his department, the Department of Justice, making rules when it comes to training, the training that is needed for the concealed carry law in Wisconsin. What's up?
Yeah, basically, when the legislature passed the concealed carry law, they said that you had to have some kind of training, but they didn't say what training meant. They didn't say how long that training should be. They left it up to the Department of Justice to implement this, you know, in the Department of Justice's, you know, way of seeing things, to write the rules for what hunting means and how long it has to be. DOJ said hunting needs to be 4 hours, and, you know, wasn't much more specific than that, but said that you'd have 4 hours of training for hunting. And in an interview last week with WPR's Gil Halstead, the Attorney General said that, you know, he's not saying what that 4 hours has to include. It seems to be the industry standard. That's why they developed it. You know, he's a supporter of the NRA and vice versa, but they don't see eye to eye on this one.
We did know from our conversations with the NRA previously that they didn't believe that we had the legal authority to define what a training course was at all. We, of course, strongly disagree. We not only believe we have the legal authority, but we have the legal obligation to define training course. And so we did so, and we did so once again in the most liberal manner possible, which I would think the NRA would be happy with. I'm a member. I'm a supporter. There are supporters of mine. I appreciate the battles they go through to protect our Second Amendment rights, but I think that they are failing to recognize that I am doing that as well in the implementation of these rules.
So I know the NRA sent Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen a letter saying how disappointed they were in this four-hour rule for training for concealed carry. What's going to happen now?
Well, the Attorney General gives every indication he's going to write this rule, and he seems pretty firm on that four-hour training requirement. What can happen is that if the legislature doesn't like it, or this year, under a new law that they passed, if the governor doesn't like it, the governor now has veto power over administrative rules, emergency rules. And so it could be that negotiations aren't exactly over on what, you know, what training means. And that when you thought the debate was over when they passed that bill earlier this year, they were just sort of kicking the can down the road a little bit, and the discussion is now sort of reviving as to what does exactly training mean. And there are a lot of lawmakers at the Capitol, a lot of Republicans who tend to view concealed carry as, a right that you can't take away, that anything, that any kind of database or any kind of registration or any kind of training is already imposing a burden. And so you're going to see a little pushback, and you have seen a little pushback from that block of lawmakers against the Attorney General. But, kind of a rare moment of Republican disunity this year, at least.
And November 1st is when it presumably becomes legal for someone to have a concealed weapon in Wisconsin, as long as you're meeting the requirements. Is this flap going to delay that in any way?
I would not, you know. You would expect they know the deadline coming up, and they are, you know, the legislature, governor, attorney general, they're all in the same party. So you would expect they'd have this done. But, yeah, that deadline is fast approaching. Also, some more decisions that will have to be made throughout Wisconsin once concealed carry gets passed. For example, you know, if you're a private business, do you want to post that people can or cannot carry in your business? If you are the Department of Administration secretary, Do you want to post that people can or cannot carry weapons in the state capitol building?
Oh, that's right. That decision has to be made. And I know that Attorney General Van Hollen was in the headlines last week as well, saying that he favored being able to carry concealed weapons into the state capitol.
Right. He supports that. Mm-hmm. But that's not his call to make in this situation.
It's the Department of Administration.
Right.
Speaking of guns and hunting, there was a hunting heritage bill proposed last week. What is this all about?
Yeah, it's a variety of incentives that a group of Republican lawmakers say will help revive interest in hunting. The youth sort of leaving the sport, or not joining the sport, people who have been hunters not coming back. And so they say that this stuff will kind of bring everybody back into the fold. You've got discounts on hunting licenses for first time hunters. If you're an existing hunter and you bring someone else into the fold, you can get discounts on future licenses. There's hunter training courses, whole bunch of stuff like that. And so, sponsors, including Republican Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter, say that this is, you know, designed to help revive the state's hunting heritage.
We're dealing with making sure that we capture those individuals, bring them into the sport of hunting, fishing, and trapping, and to make sure that the future of our sporting heritage is secure.
And then you get, if you took hunting classes for high school students, you'd get credits for those as well. And they've got adult education for hunting. So quite a few bills there that are lumped into this.
Any opposition to a bill that would encourage more young people to get involved in hunting?
There haven't been any hearings on this just yet. I do know that, you know, there was some pushback from at least one Democrat saying, you know, you say you're going to revive the hunting heritage. Why'd you cut all this money from DNR? Stuff like that.
But. Well, we will talk about other issues that are making news at the state capitol these days, including a controversy over election rules, voter ID, and others. We will get more on that and other issues, and we welcome your reactions and questions about what our state lawmakers are up to at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be sunny and mild with highs mainly in the 70s. In the 60s, near Lake Superior and in Door County. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up in our State Capitol Report, we will talk with a guest from the National Rifle Association coming up after 7:30 about why the NRA is upset with Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen over the rules, the training requirements for concealed carry. Coming up after 7:30, and we'll welcome your questions for him coming up. Right now, we are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about all the happenings at the state capitol. And last week, Sean, there was this this flap over of the Government Accountability Board's election rules that they had come up with, especially for voter ID and on recall petitions. The GAB, the Government Accountability Board, has changed its mind on these issues?
They have. And just to step back, these are situations where the board was asked for advice on, if we do this, is this okay? In a couple situations. One, there's a guy in Milwaukee that runs a website aimed at recalling Governor Walker. He wanted to know if he could create these customized, personalized, single-page recall petitions that people could download from their home, have their name and address all filled out. All they'd have to do is print it out both as somebody who wants to recall the governor and as the recall circulator. Send that into organizers, and there you go. You didn't have to have anybody come knock on your door. You didn't have to go to a place to go sign. This is what he wanted to do. The board said there's nothing in state law that says you can't do this. We have people right now that turn in recall petitions with only one signature on it, so go ahead. That drew some concern from Republican lawmakers, who said that the board was, in their words, creating law. They thought the board went a little too far there. And you could tell, they held a hearing. seemed like they were going to potentially do something, maybe force the board to write an administrative rule to change things. And if they did that, we were talking about administrative rules earlier. Yeah. Governor gets veto power again and can hold things up. And suddenly you've got the governor with say over the process that could be used in a potential recall against him. Got pretty messy. So the board kind of surprised everybody last week, came to a meeting where it looked like legislators might be going to, you know, move forward with this. And they had another plan. They backtracked on the recall petition, said, and they said, if you want to do this now, you can't have what they call a pre-populated form. You can't have somebody's name and address all filled in for them on the form. Speaking to reporters, Kevin Kennedy, Government Accountability Board Director Kevin Kennedy, explained the thinking there.
You know, we know that there are databases with hundreds of thousands of names out there. Some of them are from the gathering of signatures, you know, people filling out a form saying, please let me know when you're going to get the big recall going, you know, and they've got that data. And I think the sense was that it was difficult to draw a distinction between that and someone who would just buy our voter list and pre-populate that and send it out saying, if you're interested in the recall, you know, sign and send in. And, you know, the message that, you know, we heard in this discussion was that the petition process has to be a human-driven process.
I'm not sure I'm entirely clear still, Sean. Yeah. So the Government Accountability Board says you can't go and print off your own already filled out petition form to recall Governor Walker.
Yeah. So if you had a group that had a database, a campaign related group that had a database of, let's say, a couple hundred thousand people, that group can't just email these, you know, say a PDF file, a computer file with your name and all your information already printed out on it and just say like, hey, you know, you want to recall, send this in. You have to go out basically, you can still download a form, you can still sign it, you can still be the only person signing a form, but you have to fill in all the information yourself.
Oh, okay. All right. So I can still download a form under this new plan.
Yeah.
But I have to fill out the information rather than it already being filled out for me.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So does the Republicans who were concerned about the first rule, are they okay with this change?
And it's not final. Everything has to be approved by the Government Accountability Board itself, you know, the retired judges who sit on the board. But Republicans were happy with backtracking on this. Democrats, some of them at least, not so much, and especially Sun Prairie Democrat Gary Hebel, who said that basically Republicans applied pressure to the Government Accountability Board and that the Government Accountability Board capitulated.
I'm very concerned about what's going on here. This is extremely partisan. The abuse of power here is overwhelming with regards to bringing a nonpartisan entity, your agency, into a partisan JCRAR to request that you make rules. And now you're coming in basically with your tail between your legs saying, oh, we won't do what we thought we should do because of the pressure put upon you.
There was, besides the recall issue, there was another issue GAB backtracked on.
And that was they were going to say it was okay to renew a student ID for voting by using a sticker. And the way that the voter ID law was written, you have to have it renewed every couple years to vote. Most student IDs at four-year campuses are good for 4 years. So they weren't exactly prepared to do that, or it wasn't written with them in mind, at least not financially speaking. So the board said it was okay to have these stickers. Republican lawmakers expressed some concern with that, and the board said, we'll step that one back, and you know, there are other options for that, basically. But it sounds like that's something that's still being worked out, as is potentially tech schools have said, and this didn't get brought up in the hearing last week, but tech colleges have said that their students ought to be able to vote with a voter ID, with their student IDs. Right now, the board says that their interpretation of this law is that you can't with a tech school ID. But that may be something that they revisit at their November meeting.
Speaking of tech schools, moving ahead here, there has been a proposal to reinvest in tech technical colleges in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I guess the shortest way of putting this is that it would create a new income tax bracket for people that make more than $1 million, use that money to both reversed a disproportionate budget cut to tech schools in this last budget and increase about $35 million more for education and training. The thought being that you have all these people who want to find work right now. You actually have a number of employers who want to hire people, but the people looking for work need training. The employers need them to get the training, and these tech schools have a backlog. So Racine Assemblyman Corey Mason says it makes sense to invest in these schools if you want to create jobs.
There is nothing more frustrating than talking to an employer in your district one day who says, I can't get the skilled workers that I need. I'm going to have to look outside of the state to hire people. And then the next day, talking to a worker who says that he or she can't get the skilled training they need to get those jobs.
And Mason introduced something similar last session when Democrats were in charge and it didn't get any traction. So, you know, obviously he's got an uphill battle when there's Republican majorities.
Lots of news on the campaign trail for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. We have Republican candidates signing a no tax pledge or a no tax increase pledge.
Yeah, the Grover Norquist pledge, which almost every Republican member of Congress has signed now. Tommy Thompson announced that he had signed it last week. And, you know, that's significant because I'm sure he would debate otherwise, but I think you could find plenty of people who say that it's not exactly in character with Tommy Thompson's reputation as governor in the, you know, the 80s, certainly in the 90s, to sign a hardline pledge like this, says I won't raise taxes, you know, virtually under any circumstances. Also not like Tommy Thompson to, you know, sort of kiss the ring of Grover Norquist in a way. But, you know, he recognizes that he has a pretty tough challenge on his right in this Republican primary for U.S. Senate. Could have a five-way primary or more potentially, and certainly has some conservatives who don't want to see Tommy as their senator, as a Republican nominee in the Senate race.
Yeah, and Republican candidates Alan Lissay and Mark Newman also signed that pledge.
Frank Lissay and Mark Newman both already signed it, which, you know, I think you would expect for those two.
We're running short on time. There were some talk about the healthcare news from last week and the Badger Care.
Yeah, we've been talking about Badger Care recently, but this is Badger Care Basic, which is basically, you know, a really small, limited, almost like a public option health insurance program for people who are on a waiting list for Badger Care, but you know, couldn't get on. They could pay premiums, more like an insurance plan that was, you know, put forward by the state to get their health care that way. So they'd pay like $130 monthly premium. That already went up once this year. It's going up again. The Walker administration is saying that this program doesn't pay for itself, that, you know, by raising the premiums, you know, you'll potentially have a number of these people look to get their insurance elsewhere.
Yeah, there's a public hearing this week on a proposed constitutional amendment having to do with an individual mandate for health insurance?
Yeah, it's something that Republicans have brought up in the past, but they have majorities in the Senate and the Assembly this time, and basically it would write into the Constitution that you can't force people to buy health care, I believe, is the way it's written. And it's aimed directly at plans that, you know, that do that. So that constitutional amendments have to pass two consecutive sessions of the legislature and be approved by voters.
And another public hearing tomorrow on smart growth. What is this all about?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's smart growth. I can't remember if it was worded that way in the bill or not, but it would let local communities that have come up with comprehensive plans for growth, you know, these plans that are supposed to be long term, talk about how you expand as a community or where or whether you expand as a community. It would let these communities repeal those And that's about all I know about it at this point, but that's up for a hearing this week.
All right, so you'll be covering those. I just heard in the news, Sean, another report that talks about money for highway building and transportation needs, concerned about how much money the gas tax was going to raise. And last week, a similar study was in the news that was advocating toll roads for Wisconsin as a way to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, or whatever you want to say about it. Are toll roads in the future for Wisconsin?
Rich Kramer, our reporter Rich Kramer in Eau Claire, talked to the governor about that, about what he thought about the study and whether toll roads should be something here. And the governor said toll roads on all lanes, no, that we rely on too much tourism, and to lock the roads down in that way, he didn't want to do that. He isn't open to, as you build new highways, having a special lane that is basically like an express lane. If you want to pay a toll over there, you can do that, but
no to toll roads in general, but maybe yes to a toll on a hot lane or an express lane.
Right? Yeah, no to like the Illinois style of toll roads where they're everywhere.
Well, we didn't get to every single item, but we'll catch up next week.
All right, thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. And we will talk more about issues making news at the state capitol when we welcome in a guest from the NRA coming up after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.